Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It's Monday, January 28th, the last week of January in the new year. Fred Jackson joining me, news director for American Family News and One News Now, and Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations. Good morning, guys.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Good morning, Ed.
Well, it's I just watching the year just disappear right before our very
almost
eyes.
Almost to February.
almost to February. Almost to the Super Bowl, in which my team, the Los Angeles Rams, are playing. That's coming up this Sunday. I'm just saying, you know.
Well, if you pay off enough refs, then I'm kidding.
Oh,
no
dear.
Proof of that.
Oh, man.
But the conspiracy theorists out there throwing that out. I think Steve Jordahl brought up today in our story meeting that four of the 12 refs in the New Orleans LA game were from Southern California or something like that. So.
Yeah, but they were Chargers fans. I don't know. Who knows? I'm going to enjoy the game just simply because I'll be my wife and I were on a diet. We started in actually around Thanksgiving. Been doing well on it, but I told her, I said, I'm breaking it Sunday. I said, I'm having nachos, chicken wings.
There you go.
Hot wings. Absolutely terrible
for
you.
That's what I have every day.
Okay, well, I did when I was your age too, but then you wind up at 60 on a diet. That's right. So, hey, folks, before we get started on the news, and there is a lot of stuff going on, as you might imagine, do want to make mention of the fact, that it is an anniversary of sorts, 33 years ago today, that NASA's Space Shuttle Challenger, carrying Krista McAuliffe, the nation's first teacher-turned-astronaut, along with six other crew members, exploded just 73 seconds after liftoff. I'm reading from a Fox News article about the event. What was, guys, now obviously, Walker, you don't remember. You read maybe history about it, but Fred, you remember, I'm sure. You're old enough. This was one of the one of those rare moments where millions of teachers and school children were watching in classrooms all across America because Christy McAuliffe, she was a hero to them, rightly so. And then the aircraft just disintegrated in that just incredible explosion. And I remember I was working part-time with a church as a youth pastor, but I was full-time writing for a weekly newspaper and wrote a column about it. A lot of people are writing columns about it. But you remember that, Fred?
So January 86.
I
have that math right. And I do remember I was a news director in the combined television radio newsroom in Nova Scotia at that time. And it was one of those things where you gather around the television set as it began replaying that.
Yeah.
And it was just surreal, you know, because you're so used to successful launches.
Right. Take it for granted.
So many of those. And then this happened. And immediately, what happened? And as I recollect, when they started looking at the pieces, there was ice that had formed inside some of the seals.
Yeah.
And that broke because it was January.
Yes.
Even though it's Florida launch, there had been cold weather that melted on liftoff and then created a problem with the fuel going where it shouldn't have been.
And then, plus, you're getting up into the atmosphere where it's cold. And, you know, part of the surreal nature of that, too, is exactly what you're talking about. But you add to that the fact that we're pretty used to big budget spectacle movies where you see explosions all the time. But as you're watching, you're thinking, this isn't a movie. These are real people dying.
Yeah.
And it was a shock. I remember the president at that time, Ronald Reagan. That's how far back we go, you know, address the nation. And so anyway, that's just something to remember. Today is, you know, the 33rd anniversary of the explosion of the Shuttle Challenger, with the nation's first teacher-turned-astronaut on board along with six other crew members. Krista McAuliffe was the astronaut. So, all right, Fred, what do we got news-wise?
Well, since last we met, there was the big Rose Garden announcement on Friday from President Trump that, how do you, you know, it depends on where you are with all of this. He blinked. He did what the only thing he could do, announcing an end to the shutdown. Of course, the challenge had been, he said that he was going to stick to it, that unless he got money for a wall. Remember, he said, I'll own the shutdown. Remember that encounter in the Oval Office with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer? I'll own it. And he kept saying,
which might have sounded good at the time, but it wasn't. Very
no.
Smart.
Well, even smart over the last 30 days during the shutdown, no, it may. At one point, he said this may go on for months.
Yeah.
So when the announcement came, it's going to be this Rose Garden announcement. A lot of people were wondering, okay, here's the president. He succumbed to the pressure. Now, nobody wanted to see these federal workers out. Some of them were really starting to suffer. Some people said it was associated with the announcement that came on either late Thursday or Friday last week of huge delays at, like, the Atlanta airport, that kind of thing, where more and more TSA agents were calling in sick. And that has a tremendous impact on the economy.
Right.
So did he weigh that in? We're not sure. What was really interesting, reporters waiting outside at the Rose Garden there, and it was supposed to be at a set time. I think it was, you know, around 12:30 Central or something like that. Went on and on for 45 minutes. And some of the reporters could see inside the office there, and they were scurrying around and speculation about debating on what he was going to say when he came out there, how he was going to put this, what was going to happen. Now, towards the end, you know, he said, okay, we're going to reopen the government, but February 15th. It may shut down again.
Right.
So he tried to put a good face on this that, okay, here we are. We're putting the workers back to work. This is what Pelosi and Schumer had demanded. So we're going to give them that. But are they going to negotiate in good faith? Now, I think you would have to be truly the, you know, rose-colored glasses to think that they're going to give in. For the most part, people saw this a huge victory for Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. And we're going to play cut number three. It's going to be Brent. We're going to play Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi came out after the president made his announcement. And I think it would be an understatement to say he was gloating. Here's Chuck Schumer.
The president has agreed to our request to open the government and then debate border security. Hopefully now the president has learned his lesson. Today, the president will sign the bill to reopen the government along the outlines of what we have proposed. And hopefully, it means a lesson learned for the White House and for many of our Republican colleagues. Shutting down the government over a policy difference is self-defeating.
So, yeah, wow. I think gloating was putting it mildly. He was wagging that finger saying, we told you so, and you gave in to us.
Yeah, and listen, this is one of the things that President Trump, coming into his brand-new administration after winning the 2016 election, he was going to have to learn politics on the fly. Mm. All right, he learned campaigning on the fly. He's kind of on-the-job training. Mm-hmm. He made statements that later came back to bite him, like, we're going to build the wall, Mexico's going to pay for it. Mm. And he was outfoxed. Look, Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi are longtime crafty politicians, and I'm not using that as a pejorative when I say crafty. Politics requires, if you're going to be successful, you have to be crafty. You have to outthink your political opponents.
Right.
And so when President Trump was demanding that, you know, the Democrats before the shutdown, the Democrats give him money for the wall, they threw his words back in his face. Well, you said Mexico is going to pay for it. Why are we paying for it? Okay, so the president is learning, and this is a learning experience for him. He got outplayed. He got outplayed by the Democrats. when they were having that, you know, it was his idea, as far as I know, to have the three of them on camera discussing it. They outplayed him again. Mm-hmm. They said, well, you know, then you'll be the one to shut down the government, President Trump. He said, fine, I'll own it. He got outplayed there. He should never have said that. What he should have said was, no, you will be blamed for the shutdown. But they played on his ego. The president clearly has a healthy ego. You know, he's been successful all his life, wealthy man, and they've outplayed him. Mm. And this stings to hear Chuck Schumer gloat. Nobody likes to have something thrown in your face. I hope, Walker, that the president learns something. And maybe I don't know what's going on inside his White House, but maybe listen to some of his advisors who are crafty as well, who know how to play this game, and then maybe play this a little smarter to get what he wants.
Yeah, Friday was absolutely embarrassing. The whole Rose Garden, I'm going to reopen the government, that was a complete fold. He did everything the Democrats wanted. Democrats said, we're not going to negotiate. And by the way, Democrats aren't going to negotiate either way. They said, we're not going to talk to you, basically, until you open back up the government. He said, yes, ma'am, yes, sir, to Schumer and Nancy, and he opened back up the government. He has no leverage now.
Right.
The only option left is to do the national emergency, which people are split on that. Basically, the left thinks he doesn't have the authority. Conservative legal scholars think he does have the authority. I think from the Constitution and the federal statutes, he can use emergency powers to build the wall. Presidents over 50 times have used emergency powers for various things that I wouldn't even say are national emergencies. But either way, no matter what I think, it's going to be in the court system.
Yes,
it's going to be hung up in the court system for a couple years unless he can get an emergency appeal to the Supreme Court. But we'll just have to see, and who knows where the Supreme Court will fall on this.
I think at this point, the only option the president has, this is my opinion, I think the only option the president has is he need maybe try this with the national emergency, probably will get shot down by the courts or tied up in the courts. At some point, I think he should go on the air, and he should talk directly to the American people, and he should lay it out, and he should say, I've tried everything I know to do. I tried to get the Republicans to, you know, to fund the wall. Democrats blocked it in the Senate. I even went so far as to shut down the government to try to force the Democrats' hand. They refused, wouldn't even give me $5.7 billion. Mm-hmm. And here's all the things I've offered. And I am going to lay out my complete immigration plan, which includes building the wall to secure that border. And if the Democrats refuse, I'm not going to shut down the government. I'm opening the borders.
Yeah.
I'm going to allow the current status quo under the direction of the Democrats to operate, and he should lay out the number of illegal votes. We'll probably get to that in Texas. Scabies and all these other diseases coming mm-hmm. across from Honduras and otherwise drug gangs and stuff. And he said, I can't. For American people, I've tried everything I can. The Democrats now own the mess at the border. So whatever happens to you communities, I've tried my best. You need to call the Democrats because they now own what's happening in this country.
The unfortunate thing about that is I think the Democrats don't care. They wouldn't care if the pressure was on them. They don't care about phone calls to their office. They don't, because their base is fine with it.
Yeah, that's
anything
true.
Anything to stop Trump, their base is fine.
But the only ones that the president can appeal to then are independent voters for 2020. Because he can't do anything.
Right.
What can he do?
Right.
He can do nothing. The Republicans, when they had both houses, should have deep sixed the filibuster in the Senate to get this passed.
Right.
So I would just tell the American people, I've tried everything I had. These are the people over here who are stonewalling, and there's nothing more I can do because there is nothing more he can do.
Yes, and the deeper problem here, this really isn't about the wall. This is about Congress not doing anything.
Right.
Whether it no matter what it whether it's the whole immigration debate is a result of Congress literally sitting on its hands for 20 years.
Right.
Because this is not a new problem. We're at the tip of the iceberg where every day somebody's dying at the hands of an illegal immigrant. Literally, you can find somewhere across the country, whether it be a DUI or MS-13, somebody's dying at the hands of illegal immigrants, I would bet just about every day. If not, at a minimum, crimes are being committed by illegals every day. But I think the Democrats like this. The Democrats like, I think they would love for President Trump to do the national emergency, because it goes to their game and their strategy of everything goes through the courts. Everything is done through executive branch and the courts. Long term, that helps the Democrats because they got these far left judges in the Ninth Circuit and elsewhere, and they don't even need Congress. We don't need consensus. We don't need bipartisanship. You get a Democrat president up there, they can do, whether it be, I mean, you've seen it with DACA. All these things can be done through executive action, and we don't even need Congress anymore, which is not what the framers intended when they established Congress.
Fred, I got to say, if the Republic, if Donald Trump flipped this and went to the Hispanic community, and because I think they're the only ones who can put pressure, because to Walker's point, the Democrats want this. Mm-hmm. They want this scenario. But what if President Trump goes to the Hispanic community and says, listen, here's all the, I'm willing to deal mm-hmm. here. Here's all the things I am willing to talk about and make some real changes here and permanently fix the situation, but they won't do anything.
Yeah.
Mm. Maybe that pressure works. I don't know. Maybe it doesn't, but I the president's run out of options.
To your point, though, and then Fred can jump in, the poll numbers, the opinion of the president amongst Hispanics during the shutdown mm-hmm. went up mm-hmm. because they're the ones, the people, the legal Hispanics here, however they got here, visa, you know, whatever, they're here legally, some of them, and they're working. But the illegal immigrants, who are also mostly Hispanic, they're taking their jobs and lowering their wages. That's right. Why the Hispanic poll numbers went up for Trump.
One thing I'm a little surprised is that the president and other Republicans did not play up the fact that there was a vote in the House to pay the federal workers while right. they were off, and the Democrats defeated that.
Yeah.
You see, in his Rose Garden announcement on Friday, I would have made mention of that.
Right.
Here's what's happened over the last 34 days. By the way, you may not have heard because of the mainstream media that there was a vote in the House to make sure these people kept getting paid
right.
during the mm-hmm. partial shutdown. And 222 Democrats voted against it. Did you know that, folks?
Right. But this is part of the inexperience of the Trump administration.
Yeah.
And now, listen, on the job training, I understand that it's a sharp mm-hmm. learning curve. But if it's true that they were scrambling around before that speech, mm-hmm. not really knowing what they were going to say or what they'd do, they didn't have time to think this through, like yeah. you're talking about, Fred.
Well, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, the President Trump this morning talking about 50-50 chance that he gets a deal. I think he's being optimistic.
No, he's not getting a deal.
Why would the Democrats make yeah. a deal? They yeah. hold all the cards and they know it.
Yeah.
They had here's why Chuck Schumer was gloating, because he could rub the president's face in it, and he knows the president can do bupkis.
Right.
Yeah.
The president can't do anything. Now, if your opponent in a real give and take, you frost President Trump. Mm-hmm. And you humiliate him like Chuck Schumer did, you know that as the give and take starts again, he may not give you something.
Right.
But they know he's got nothing to give.
Yeah, I know.
And I think all he can do is go to the American people, lay out all these things, go to the Hispanic community and say, listen, I'm the only one here mm-hmm. willing to be the grown-up, mm-hmm. and the Democratic Party is now the roadblock. So mm-hmm. whatever happens, folks, don't blame me, blame them.
Right.
The other question that's come up in the last 48 hours or so is State of the Union,
right.
which was scheduled for tomorrow evening. So remember, Pelosi canceled that because of concerns over security. But now we're back to negotiating a time to do this State of the Union address. So once again, though, Pelosi's got all the cards, because she can just say, well, we're busy negotiating now up until the middle of February, so we're not going to do it. Yeah, Republican strategists would love for the president to be able to go before the 15th of February, get out there with Nancy Pelosi sitting behind him, go to the American people, introduce the people up there in the balcony, the angel moms, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think she's going to give him a chance to do that.
Well, then what he should do is, I think, hold it in the Senate.
Yeah.
He should hold it in the Senate, and this State of the Union speech tomorrow tomorrow night would be one in which he lays out everything I've said. And he said, and just to prove what these Democrats are willing to do to this country in order to try to win, they're not here. Mm. They are not here because they're not working for the American. I mean, it would be his free shot at the Democrats, and he would have the opportunity to lay it all out. Or if she does say, okay, we'll have the speech, you're going to see some of these new radical Democrats that came in booing, probably turning around, turning their backs or whatever. This is going to get ugly. The president needs to make sure all that ugly is splashed on the Democrats.
And the idea that somehow security and the logistics were not laid out, even when they called it off there last week when President Trump said, all right, I'm not going to do the shutdown. I'm not going to do the State of the Union. To think that the Secret Service and Homeland Security did not have things in place just for it to happen.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, who are we kidding?
Well, they said they were ready to do it.
They can have the State of the Union tomorrow.
Yeah.
Even if President Trump says, I'm going to do it, and he says it the day before. They've got the resources. They know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. So the only reason that they're not having the State of the Union tomorrow is because of Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm. And because Nancy Pelosi knows is the president's speech.
Yes. And you know, can you imagine... Can you imagine Republicans telling Barack Obama he can't come to the State of the Union in their House chamber?
Yeah.
Can you imagine the cries of racism, whatever, all the other name-calling they would do? I mean, Republicans would be blasted by everybody. They would even be blasted by Republicans because conservatives actually hold their own, you know, elected officials accountable. And we're not far, you know, some of this stuff like canceling the State of the Union. I mean, come on now. That's a big deal. I mean, ever since who's the first president?
Well, George Washington. Now that you know, having it on the second Tuesday, all that is negotiable. But I think it's been going on for decades.
To now use the State of the Union as political leverage. That's unprecedented. But it shows the divide.
It also shows the Democrats not only feel like they're on a roll, but they've got protection from the mainstream media.
And from their base.
From their base, but in terms of those that are, you know, in the middle of the electorate, they know they've got protection. I mean, listen, this is like the mob.
Yeah.
I mean, I hate to keep bringing that up since I'm always complaining about it as an Italian, but it's like having mob protection.
Yeah.
This is what the mainstream media has turned out to be. Yeah. A propaganda arm for the Democratic Party, and the Democrats know we've got cover, folks.
That's true. They'll spin it. You've got cover.
Exactly
right.
The other thing the Democrats do better than the Republicans, they stick together. And that has been brought out time and time again. In one of the votes there in the Senate last week, 6 Republicans voted for the Democrat proposal. People like Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, the usual suspects.
Right.
Voted with the Democrats. The Democrats vote as a unit every time. They may disgruntle in the background, you know, there was this alleged rebellion against Nancy Pelosi, et cetera, et cetera. But at the end of the day, they stick together. Republicans do not do that.
Yeah.
And that has been a problem from the get-go. But that's something the president has to deal with.
Well, I think shutting down the government is not going to work at this point.
No.
It might have worked before the 2018 midterm elections, but it's not going to work now for the president because the Democrats have made it clear they don't care about Hispanics in this country, and they don't care about government workers. As you pointed out, the Republicans wanted to pay them while the shutdown was going on.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be able to pressure the Democrats that way.
No.
The president has got to come up with a clever, crafty way of his own to turn this focus on the Democrats.
Yep.
All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. When we come back, editing genes for children, I'm talking about DNA. We'll talk more about that when we come back.
On the next Today's Issues, we'll talk with Dr. Frank Turek of Cross Examine.
They passed an infanticide bill, basically, a law that will allow you to kill your children all the way up to the moment of birth. And in fact, you can even kill a child after it's born if you were trying to abort it and it survived the abortion.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio and on Facebook.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You can't squeeze more into 3 days, and we will in Washington, D.C. on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and in September. We're going to the Capitol, Library of Congress, the Supreme Court, Lincoln Memorial, the Korean and Vietnam Memorials, the Iwo Jima Memorial, the Arlington National Cemetery, the White House, that's outside, Jefferson Memorial, and the National Archives, and we're going to Mount Vernon on that Saturday of our tour. So much to see, so much to do, and it includes lectures and talks from Stephen McDowell, who will be our historian along the way. For more information on these June or September Spiritual Heritage Tours and the separate tour to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, for all the information on this, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. Gladys Knight is facing accusations of being a sellout after she agreed to perform the national anthem at the Super Bowl. The legendary soul singer defended her upcoming performance in a statement, says she wants to give the Star-Spangled Banner back its voice. She went on to say she prays the anthem will bring Americans together so we can move forward. The controversy over the national anthem started in 2016 when Colin Kaepernick decided to take a knee. But the disgraced ex-quarterback sparked a nationwide movement that disrespected the military, the flag, and law enforcement. And now Kaepernick's minions are turning their wrath on Gladys Knight. She's even been accused of turning her back on the black community. On the contrary, Gladys Knight is attempting to demonstrate that we are one nation regardless of skin color. She's not a sellout. She's a patriot. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman today. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson, news director for American Family News and One News Now, and also Walker Wildman, AFA Vice President of Operations. Well, we want to welcome a guest to discuss a topic that I'm guessing most of our listeners, if you're like me, know next to nothing about. We're going to talk to Dr. David Prentice, who's Vice President and Research Director for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. And Dr. Prentice, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. Good to be with you.
Well, sir, we're going to be talking to you about... This is just kind of bizarro world we've entered into, very science fiction-y, editing the genes of a human embryo. But before we do that, let our listeners know a little bit about the Institute and its connection to the Susan B. Anthony list. A lot of our listeners do know about SBA. Tell us a little bit about your Institute.
All right. And yeah, not too many people have heard of the Charlotte Lozier Institute, but we're the education and research arm of the Susan B. Anthony list. They're sort of the political arm. They're the muscular arm, you might say. But we're, some people would say, we're the geeks at the end of the hall that provide all of that basic facts. In fact, our motto is science and statistics for life. So we have a host of elite scientists and scholars and legal scholars who do a lot of background research to put together, write papers, testify at the state and national and even international level to try and get good life-affirming policies.
And so Lozier is how you pronounce the name?
Yes, sir.
Okay, Charlotte Lozier Institute, my bad. All right. Well, Dr. Prentice, the reason we wanted to have you on was to talk about something. Now, I'm looking at an article from MIT Technology Review. So we're talking smart people. And the headline is Chinese scientists are creating CRISPR babies. This all uppercase, C-R-I-S-P-R. And the subhead is a daring effort is underway to create the first children whose DNA has been tailored using gene editing. Now, I looked up CRISPR, and this didn't help much. It's the definition is clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats. And so, as you could imagine, that doesn't help. So, we want you to help us with this.
Well, and you know, I'd go back and use that that abbreviation. Just call it CRISPR, or some people will call it CRISPR-Cas. But what that basically is, it's an enzyme system. It's an enzyme system that is designed to specifically go into the DNA, find a particular sequence of those bases, those letters that make up our genome, and cut it at that site. The aim being that you're either going to turn off a gene that's gone bad or is producing a mutated protein or something, or to cut and then splice back in a good gene. This is all about genetic engineering. Gene editing is the modern term that we use, but the idea is to change the genome, which leads us to what this scientist in China did. His aim was not to just do that to somebody who has a particular disease and you're trying to treat that person. He wanted to make what we've called in the past designer babies. He really wanted to be the one to design what their genome would like. And he targeted a particular gene that, for want of a better term, is supposed to protect people against infection by the HIV/AIDS virus. Now, there's a lot of discussion going on in the scientific community about what this guy did. But the bottom line is that he wanted to design the genome of these children in a certain way to reflect essentially his desire to be the first in the world to create and birth these designer babies. I mean, there's a whole host of things wrong with what he did, and starting with being the designer. We've already got a designer, and I think right. He did a pretty good job and trying to redesign humanity after our own image or our own ideas is obviously a mistake. It's a step past what we would consider good life-affirming ethics, and doing it now in a way with little tiny human embryos, the most vulnerable human beings, to try and change their genome in a way that he would want to do it. The other term your listeners may hear is germline gene editing or inherited gene editing. The idea being if you do it at that stage of your life, when you're this tiny little human embryo, that you're making that change in the genome of these individuals so early that it will then be carried on in all of their cells through the rest of their life and can be passed on or inherited for future generations. And there's a certain hubris here in terms of thinking that we know all of the things that can go on and that we're smart enough to redesign the human genome in a way that is going to be better than the original designer came up with.
All right. Well, Dr. Prentice, let me just, this whole story, as I started kind of digging in a little bit, is very, of course, Brave New World-ish. And mm-hmm. And this particular instance, the additional bizarre nature of this is, I think this this Chinese scientist, Jian Kui, I think he was arrested or something too. I mean, the Chinese said he wasn't supposed to, but let me just kind of play devil's advocate a little bit here. Okay. I mean, we already try to cure diseases after they occur. What's wrong mm-hmm. with trying to cure diseases before they occur?
And I think that's a good idea on the face of it. But the problem is severalfold. Number one, we're trying to do something that we really don't know enough about. As it turns out, this gene that he changed, and there were two little girls born from this genetic experiment that he did. The aim, again, was to make sure that they essentially would be immune to infection with the HIV/AIDS virus. But what happened was it only worked about halfway. One of the girls might be immune. The other one is not going to be because his experiment really didn't work. And that's another thing we need to bring out is experimenting with young human individuals here. It turns out the change that he made, this genetic change, might protect the one little girl from HIV/AIDS, but probably will make her more susceptible to a couple of other types of infections and different types of viruses. We do not know exactly what we're doing when we go in to try and redesign these things, and we certainly don't know enough to say this will be good for future generations. I'm firmly convinced that, yes, we should use this technology wisely to try and treat diseases, those already born, or those in which you're not going to be changing the DNA for future generations, people that have a disease, but trying to be wise enough, should we say, to be able to redesign the genome in a way for future generations is simply a step too far. It's ethically and scientifically not a good idea to go this route.
Dr. Prentice, this is Walker Wildman here. What are some of these countries doing to prevent this? Because, you know, China acts outraged. The government acts like they're outraged about this. But I'm wondering, are they just putting on a show? Are they allowing this stuff to go on kind of behind the scenes, so that they can be, quote, on the cutting edge of this? What's the status when it comes to laws across the world?
That's a great question, sir. And let me just preface that first by saying here in the U.S., we have a law that they couldn't do in this country what that guy did in China. It's not the best protection, which should be, hey, we're just not even going to experiment on any human embryos at all. But it does make an effective bulwark at this point. But in China, it's a little hard to tell. They claim that they have laws that he broke in doing this. And the story kind of keeps dribbling out that he probably left his university position, raised money, and did this experiment on the side on his own and didn't notify authorities and probably even misled the parents when he was doing this genetic experiment on their embryos. The story sounds like now China has him under some sort of a house arrest, and he's going to lose his job and maybe his life, depending on what goes on, because the Chinese government really were hoping that they could lead the way in terms of this new technology, as you talked about. And when the whole world said this was a bad idea, they were losing faith. But they really don't have very good laws to prevent this. And there are a lot of countries where there are not good laws to prevent this. And you know, the other disappointing thing about this is the scientific elites, if you will, who organized this conference and are trying to say, hey, this is the way we ought to go, really weren't so much upset with this guy in terms of what he did, but just in when he did it. They think he kind of jumped the gun, but they would like to see these kind of things go on. So there are a number of us that are trying to say, look, we need to cut this off now. There should just not be any of this type of embryo genetic engineering, whether it's just playing in the lab, which they shouldn't be doing, or trying trying to birth these genetically engineered children, that there does need to be, not just in the U.S., but around the world, an effective barrier to say, this is not where we should be. What we should be focusing on are treating born individuals and relieving their suffering instead of trying to be the redesigners of the human genome.
Our guest has been Dr. David Prentice, Vice President and Research Director for the Charlotte Lozier Institute. By the way, that is spelled L-O-Z-I-E-R. Dr. Prentice, thank you for being on. Before you go, let our listeners know about the website and where they can go to get more information, what kind of information they might get at your website.
That's great. Thank you so much. And the website is Lozier Institute, L-O-Z-I-E-R Institute.org. What you're going to find is not just things related to some of this weird science, like gene editing, but pretty much the whole gamut of life from beginning to end. And as I mentioned before, we have scholars that are writing papers, but also making that accessible to just anyone who wants to learn more about these issues, including various topics about abortion, trying to come up with good policies against abortion to try and limit that, to try and finally cut it off. Things about gene editing, yes, things about stem cells. We keep fighting this fight that it's the adult stem cells, ethically obtained, that are the ones that are treating millions of people already, whereas the embryonic stem cells that rely on destruction of young human life have not helped a single person. So I'd encourage your listeners, again, to go to LozierInstitute.org and just look at the various things we've got there and use those facts as well.
Well, Dr. Prentice, you certainly helped us and our listeners understand this very complex issue, kind of put the cookies on the bottom shelves, as it were. And so we will we'll keep the Lozier Institute, the Charlotte Lozier Institute, on our Rolodex, so to speak, and have you guys, you men and women, I saw a pretty large staff of researchers on our program whenever we have issues that we can that we need accessible to the layman. So thank you, sir, for being on with us.
Thank you so much.
All right, that is Dr. David Prentice from the Charlotte Lozier Institute. You know, yeah, I was just going to say, Fred, and then I'll flip it to you, but, you know, we talk a lot about individual rights, and I can see parents making the argument, listen, we want to have a baby that's been gene edited for certain. But once that's done, Fred, the genes that you've edited go out into the general population, into the gene pool. That child marries someone. Those kinds of edits get passed along.
What if you get it wrong?
What if you get it wrong? Yeah. This is serious stuff.
Well, and stuff that used to be kind of science fiction back several years ago, not too long ago, we're now talking about people testing, let's build a superior race.
Right.
You know, when Dr. Prentice was talking, I was thinking about a movie back several years ago, The Boys from Brazil. I don't know if you remember that movie.
I never saw it, but that was about the Nazis.
A mad Nazi scientist cloning Adolf Hitler.
Yes.
It was a spooky movie.
That's from a famous novel, I think, too. One of those spy thriller things.
Exactly. But I was just thinking, and when I was back in my earlier days as a news director on the West Coast of Canada, there was growing concern amongst some, and in this case, it had to do with finding out the sex of a baby, and if it was a girl, they didn't want it. They wanted a boy.
Right.
So this all plays into the whole idea that more and more mankind is believing he has the right to have that control.
Right.
Of who is born, abortion.
Right.
We talk about a lot, and we have a story coming up in our next story here about this. But who has the control over that, and then the kinds of people that we want.
Right.
You know, we're going to look at we're going to design someone that is really good for society.
Yeah.
We're going to look at how they think, and that's the kind of people that we want. This is scary time. I just pray the Lord returns soon.
Right.
Because we're going down a path That is extremely dangerous here.
Right. Well, and we will continue to look at this. I'm glad we had Dr. Prentice on because this is something that, you know, I'd read about this CRISPR stuff, but I didn't pay a whole lot of attention to it. But this really is, as you said, Fred, this is scary stuff.
So. Yeah, and it's one of these issues that we do need experts like Dr. Prentice to come on because, like you said, I mean, I don't know enough about it because there's always this research going on about, you know, changing things, and they do research on animals, but you know, I'd never known what opinion to have on this, so being briefed on it was great.
Yeah, great. All right, what was our next story, Fred?
Well, last week, one of the big stories was the governor of New York, the state of New York, Andrew Cuomo, celebrating the fact and signing into law an abortion bill that's now getting a lot of attention because it allows abortion to take place right up until the completion of the 9th month of pregnancy. And it was a celebration in New York by the governor. Cut number 6.
It is a good evening this evening. Congratulations, congratulations, congratulations. Let's give a warm welcome to all the advocates who have worked so long and so hard for so many years. And let's give a round of applause to all the legislators who finally got it done. We took the vote. And we have a special guest of honor. It couldn't come together any better than it's come together today. Sarah Weddington, who argued Roe v. Wade, here today on the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. Let's give Sarah a big round of applause.
Yeah, a big party in New York. And that's the way it sounded. And they lit up the Empire State Building in pink and all of that sort of thing. There's been a lot of concern obviously raised in the pro-life community about this, but one of the issues that came up this morning on Fox and Friends, they had Cardinal Timothy Dolan on of New York because Andrew Cuomo is a Roman Catholic. So how is the church responding to this? The Roman Catholic Church has taken the lead in this country on the pro-life movement for the most part. A lot of the kids that attended the Life of March the other day are Roman Catholic kids.
Right.
So a lot of Catholics want to know, okay, why isn't the church doing something about Andrew Cuomo?
Right.
How can he remain in a member of the Catholic Church in good status? So this morning, Steve Ducey, one of the hosts of Fox and Friends, who I believe is a Catholic as well, had the cardinal on to talk about all this, and the cardinal was saying how horrible this is that New York has done this. But then Steve Ducey was asking him about, well, what is the church going to do? He asked him about excommunication or denying Cuomo the taking of
the Eucharist.
The Eucharist, the Lord's Supper.
Protestants call it Lord's Supper.
Lord's Supper. So let's have a listen to what the cardinal has to say at that suggestion about disciplining Andrew Cuomo, a Roman Catholic. Cut number 8.
Ghoulish, grisly, gruesome. These are the words that people, independent observers, are using about this so-called Reproductive Health Act. You don't have to be a Catholic to abhor those kind of things. This is just awful, and I don't know why we would brag about this.
There are calls from people in the Catholic Church for Governor Cuomo to be excommunicated. Mm-hmm. From the Catholic
You're
Church.
Telling me I get wheelbarrows of letters every day. I think that would be counterproductive myself. For one.
Well, he's not following Catholic doctrine.
Well, I don't know if this, but there's my point, Steve. We would be giving ammo to our enemies who say this is an internal Catholic disciplinary matter.
What about denying him communion?
Well, look, that's a. You're making me, I don't rarely get restless, but I am. That's kind of a pastoral issue that I think one has to talk to him about.
So there you have it. And, you know, the question of, for instance, Nancy Pelosi has been a big advocate for abortion, obviously. She is a Roman Catholic in good standing in her church there in San Francisco. So you see there, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, who's been around a long time.
Right.
He's normally very comfortable in interviews. But boy, he was uncomfortable with those questions.
You know, and I'm not Catholic, so I'm not going to lecture the Catholic Church about what they should do. However, I think part of the problem of the church in America and in the West is a lack of church discipline. Yeah, I'm to Protestant churches as well, where we say, this is what we believe, And then we act as if it doesn't matter if you believe it and want to say you're a Christian or you're a member of this church. Now, I'm not talking about ordinary Christians who are struggling with and failing to uphold church teaching
right.
or to live according to Scripture, but when you are a leader and you are spearheading, like some of the Catholics in the New York State Legislature and Andrew Cuomo, Nancy Pelosi, you are spearheading depravity. I got to tell you, I don't know what the holdup is with the Catholic Church. If you can't deny communion to, now you may not want to talk about it, and you allow Andrew Cuomo to bring it up if you want. I can understand keeping that private, but if you can't deny this man communion, and if you can't excommunicate this man, mm-hmm. then who would you excommunicate?
Right. Yeah. What qualifies?
Obviously not people, bishops who have covered up acts of abuse of children.
Right.
That doesn't happen either.
Right.
So at some point, you are destroying the credibility of the church itself.
Yeah, and this goes to a wider problem, not just with the Catholic Church. This is a Protestant evangelical problem too, and that is church discipline.
Right.
You know, because the excuse is in not carrying out any church discipline, I mean any church discipline, is they say, well, you know, we're all sinners and blah, 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 blah. We all struggle with stuff. And that's true, but that's not what we're talking about here. There's a difference. There's a difference between unrepentant sin, habitual sin, and then someone who is genuinely struggling with something, and in their struggle, they know it's sin, they repent daily, and they're seeking help.
Right.
That's two different camps. What we're talking about here is someone who is in habitual, unrepentant sin, like Andrew Cuomo, promoting policies that kill babies. If we don't start implementing some type of church discipline on these matters, then the whole idea of church membership, etc., is going to have no meaning at all, because anybody can be a member.
And I would say Andrew Cuomo, Nancy Pelosi, these types of people are even beyond the category you just laid out.
Yeah.
These aren't just unrepentant sinners on the issue of abortion.
They are leading the charge
right. and causing.
Exactly.
They're causing.
Yeah.
They have taken a causative role in promoting. I mean, this goes right to Romans 1. In Romans 1, you see God giving people over to deeper and darker depravity, okay? And then at the end of that chapter, it says these are people, the long list of types of people that Paul's talking about, he says these are people who not only cheer, they not only know that people who do such things are worthy of death, they cheer others and encourage them to do it.
Yeah.
And that is what Andrew Cuomo did. This is a blight on the Catholic Church. You can't excommunicate that guy when he's applauding it and saying, well done. And then they bring the woman who argued Roe versus Wade.
Yeah.
This is depravity.
Yeah.
And it is an evil that's going to bring judgment on our country. And Cardinal Dolan sitting there going, well, that's counterproductive. I don't even know what that means.
Yeah.
Counterproductive?
Yeah.
These people are depraved, sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not gonna in a productive way persuade them.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know what? What happened in New York, if we allow far left Democrats in the White House and in Congress, which now they have the House, they will do this stuff nationwide, no doubt.
Absolutely. And with the Catholic Church, here I am. I said I wasn't gonna lecture them. What they are saying is that, yeah, you can be a good Catholic in standing with the church and do these kinds of things. Right. I would tell them, you want to do these kind of things, you have to make a choice, but because you're not going to besmirch the name of the Catholic Church,
right. yeah.
and you are leaven in our midst, and we're purging the evil from our midst. This is going to help Andrew Cuomo in the long run. What they're doing now is hurting them. Look, folks, sorry for that preaching on my...
I enjoyed it, Ed.
Yeah, we're going to be back in 5 minutes. We'll be right back.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.